This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies. So maybe you forget to bend your knees when you lift, or you twist your body too fast shoveling snow and feel a little pop at the bottom of your back. You've just joined the not-so-exclusive club of back pain sufferers. Symptoms can vary from a persistent twinge to excruciating pain. And treatments are as varied as the symptoms. Should you have surgery? Should you consider more conservative treatments like physical therapy or alternatives like chiropractic care? We thought we'd speak to one of the country's leading back doctors about the options. Dr. James Weinstein is chairman of the Department of Orthopedic Surgery at Dartmouth Medical School and editor of the medical journal Spine. He also heads the ongoing research project Spine Patient Outcome Research Trial, or SPORT, which effectively compares the effectiveness of surgical to non-surgical treatments for the three most commonly diagnosed back problems. Terry spoke to Weinstein earlier this month. She asked if his results show whether surgery is effective for people suffering from disc herniation.
We had 1,200 patients enrolled, which is the largest study by far. And in that case, what was really impressive, Terry, was the improvement of the patients who didn't have any surgery. The surgical patients got better a little faster, but when you look at the results, the non-operative patients, their improvement was really much more than I had anticipated and very significant. I think what that allows for in that particular diagnosis, again, is that not that surgery or non-surgical treatment's the best choice one way or the other, but it allows the patient to understand there is an option here.
Okay, so that's disc herniation. What about stenosis? How effective was surgery there?
Yes, in the study that we published in the New England Journal this past spring, summer, that was patients who had spinal stenosis with a slippage of the vertebrae. And in that case, the data showed that patients with surgery did better. It was heartwarming to me to know that in this spinal stenosis condition that we actually were making the patients better and there was a benefit to treatment.
Let's talk a little bit about non-surgical treatments that you've found to be effective. Let's start with the most basic one, physical therapy. I know you advocate keeping moving, after a back injury. How effective do you think physical therapy is in healing back problems and preventing recurrences?
The fact of the matter is most spinal conditions, 85 to 90% get better with essentially no treatment. And if you take physical therapy as being resuming your normal activities, then I would advocate for that. A specific exercise program, I think, can be important if you need that kind of help. But the most important thing is to try to get back to your normal activities as soon as you can. And I've given this story before about my wife who had a serious disc problem and had severe pain. And, you know, treating your family members is always dangerous, and I hope she won't get mad at me for talking about this. But the fact of the matter is I said, honey, you need to, you know, get going. Do what you normally do. Go running. Go off to your job. And I think she was about ready to throw me out of the house because she said, I know you're supposed to be an expert, but I'm telling you I can't do any of that, and you're crazy. And I understand that because I see patients tell me that every day sometimes. But I said, honey, please do that, and I think you'll feel better. So I helped her strap on a little bit of a corset, and she went running, and she came back, and she said, you know, I am a little better. But it's really hard to get somebody to do that when they're in so much discomfort. And I've had the problem myself. I went to a post office one day, and I bent over to get the mail from my post office box, and I couldn't stand up. And I said, well, it serves me right. I'm always telling people to get going, and now I have to do it myself. And, you know, I crawled to my car holding on to the parking meters to get back to my car, laughing at myself a little bit that I can't believe this happened. But I'm a runner, too, and I said, I've got to just do it. And I've found over the years that when I've had people and patients get back to what they do, despite the discomfort, which can be extraordinary pain and discomfort, that they do get better faster.
I'm with your wife. I think it sounds absolutely insane if you're in serious back pain to go out running. not only that. I thought that a lot of spinal doctors were kind of down on running because of all the pressure it puts on the spine.
Yeah, I'm one of those, I don't know if you call them crazy runners, and I agree with you that it's hurtful, but hurt doesn't mean harm.
But sometimes it means harm, right?
Well, it means hurt. It means hurt. But the fact that you're talking about, you know, not running because you might affect your joints or your disc, there's really very little evidence for that. And in fact, it's not that compression force that always causes the problem. It's more of the shear or gliding forces that actually can affect the cartilage and joints. But really, staying physically active and in good shape, you know, it's not just good for your back. It's good for your heart. It's good for your muscles. It's good for your bones so you don't get osteoporosis, et cetera. So yes, it does hurt. And I've been there, and I think I appreciate it. And, you know, people and listeners will say, well, you don't have it as bad as I do. And that's probably true in many cases. But I do know that hurt doesn't always mean harm. You're not going to become paralyzed with this spine problem, which patients fear that, you know, sometimes they're told if you don't take care of this, you could be in a wheelchair or that's scaring patients unnecessarily. In our studies, we didn't have any patient become paralyzed. No patient lost function, surgical or non-surgical. And so those are rare events. When they occur, they're a disaster and they're a tragedy, and we pray that they never happen. But they're very uncommon.
But, you know, in that whole hurt isn't always harm that you were saying, if you have, say, a disc problem where there's a herniation and something from the disc is pressing on a nerve, if you do certain exercises or do certain activities, can't that put more pressure on the nerve and inflame the nerve further, making it more difficult for the nerve to heal?
Absolutely, and I think that's why you want to work with your physician to make sure that you're not at risk for that to occur. But again, Terry, that's a rare event. I know it seems counterintuitive, and I know what I'm saying. You know, people would criticize, and I'm open to that criticism. But we didn't find patients who were in the non-operative group with pressure on the nerve actually getting worse. The human body is a dynamic structure, and it adapts to changes every day in ways that we, you know, have yet to totally understand. And this is something that needs more work, needs a better understanding. But I think working with your physician, they can help guide you through the non-surgical treatment and tell you if you're at risk or not at risk. But I would say from our study that risk was not what it's anticipated to be by most.
Now, what do you think of chiropractic and other approaches to spinal manipulation?
Well, I think chiropractic is something that really is a unique specialty. Touching a patient and laying hands on a patient is very important, and probably in medicine today, because of the reimbursement strategies that we study through the Institute and other things, we've sort of changed the strategy of allowing the physician to be the kind of healer that Norman Rockwell shows in his paintings. But I think we are so rushed that traditional medicine doesn't do that. I think chiropractic takes the time. They use manipulative techniques, some of which seem to help people, again, with apparently low risk. But I would say in these particular diagnoses that we studied in sport, there's very little information to support chiropractic treatment for the disc herniation or the spinal stenosis. So for those three diagnoses, I would say that chiropractic is probably not as helpful as it could be. On the other hand, it's a non-operative treatment, and if it's low risk and it helps somebody avoid an operation, then I think the patient should be informed about that risk and benefit and make a decision about trying that treatment.
Do you have an opinion on Pilates?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think core body strength is really important. I think to do Pilates well is incredibly difficult. I think that you need to work with somebody who's really an expert so you don't hurt yourself. I see many patients in my clinic who have tried different treatments by maybe instructors that weren't really capable of actually working with people of all different ages and different conditions, meaning their physical condition, and people get injured. So I think you need to work with people that are, if there's certification in that, I'm not sure, but people who can help you and guide you through the Pilates or any exercise program in an effective way without hurting yourself. Again, hurt doesn't always mean harm, but if you're trying to exercise, you'd rather be exercising and not hurting. I think core body strength for the spine, which Pilates focuses on, is really important.
What about acupuncture for back problems?
I think acupuncture is another one of those really interesting domains where treatments that you know, certainly has a history much longer than the United States and the Chinese culture. And working on these various meridians, to me, it makes sense that you could potentially block the impulses going to the spinal cord where people actually perceive the initial part of pain going on up to the brain to actually understand they have pain. And if you can overcome those impulses through acupuncture, which is the theory, that you actually can negate the pain perception by providing information in the spinal cord that actually overwhelms that, then there is some science to that. And probably modern medicine needs to do more work to understand that at a very basic level. And for whatever reasons, we haven't done that.
I want to get back to the back pain that you've had. Has it recurred over the years?
Yes.
What's your diagnosis?
My diagnosis, I have not had an x-ray or an MRI, so...
Well, why not? You doctors, you're so strange.
Yes, well,
why,
we are.
Why not?
I guess I could say I was afraid to see what I would find, but on the other hand, what I do know from my research and my work over the last 20 to 30 years is that diagnostic imaging studies don't always correlate, and in fact, rarely correlate with the actual symptoms somebody has. So you could, one of the issues, as you know, in this country, is we're overusing diagnostic testing, and so I'm consciously aware of that. If we look for something, we're likely to find it, which then leads you to a pathway of different treatments, different diagnostic tests that may, in fact, have no bearing on your outcome. My back pain, to me, is sort of what I would call the idiopathic. We don't really know what's causing it, but I'm guessing as I get a little older, my discs are losing a little bit of water. They're narrowing a little bit. I probably have a little bit of arthritis in my joints and my back like I do in my knees. And that periodically causes pretty significant pain. And there are days I'm not sure I can actually go through my clinical practice. And I don't say anything to my patients, but I want to tell them, you know, I hurt too, and I want to commiserate with you a little bit about your symptoms and my symptoms, and maybe you can help me. But the fact is, I sit on my chair gingerly when I talk to them, and I try to get up without wincing. But I know in my mind that within, you know, 3, 7, 10 days, it's going to get better, and I should just keep doing my running and keep going. And most of the episodes I've had, Terry, over the years have gotten better.
You know, one of the expressions you often use is hurt doesn't always mean harm, and you're referring there to like exercise and movement. Just because it hurts doesn't mean you're harming yourself. But how do you tell the difference between good pain and bad pain?
The bad hurt is when things deteriorate. That's sort of my message. So in the back area, if you are hurting a lot and your symptoms are getting worse, or your leg pain is getting more severe, or you have a change in sensation, that's a time when then the hurt is causing some harm potentially. You need to sort of step back, reevaluate with your physician, and take the next steps. But I think I like to watch sports on the weekend when I have time. And sitting on the couch, you know, you can get a backache just from sitting. Sitting causes incredible pressure on the disc, more than standing. It's a bad position for the spine to sit. You need to get up from the couch and watching the game and walk around and maybe take a walk around the block at halftime or so that you're not just sitting, which is really a bad position for the disc. And so bad hurt occurs when you've become immobile or you have a condition that you're actually making worse by something that you're doing. And your body will try to get you away from that, either getting a muscle reaction or trying to get you to move into a different position.
One of the many hats that you wear is that you're the head of the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practices. When it comes to spinal problems, what do you think the healthcare system doesn't get or doesn't adequately respond to?
Well, I think it's not unique to spine, but spine is one of the conditions where there's tremendous variation. So if you live on the East Coast of the United States, where we live in New Hampshire, versus where you live in Philadelphia or people in California, there's very different rates at which people have surgical procedures. Casper, Wyoming, for whatever reason, has the highest rates of back surgery in the United States. So you might be 8 times more likely to have a back operation just by the fact that you live in Casper, Wyoming. It is puzzling, and in our work at the Institute, we see this over and over again, that geography determines destiny. One of the reasons we started the Shared Decision-Making Center here at Dartmouth was to try to work on the issue of variation by patients getting involved in those decisions. And where we've done this in trials and studies, we've seen that the rates of procedures actually narrow, so that the variation or the coefficient or the amount of variation in a given surgical procedure narrows when you actually get patients involved in the decision process.
You know, we were talking earlier about the effectiveness of different spinal surgeries. One of the things that has to do with the effectiveness is how good your surgeon is. What are some of the questions you suggest that you ask a surgeon before agreeing to be operated on by him or her?
I think that's a great question, Terry. I think that today transparency is really important. And the healthcare profession is being challenged, I think, to be more transparent in providing information to the public about the outcomes of their treatment. The idea of talking to your doctor and knowing how many cases they've done of this particular diagnosis, what their results are, I think are all fair questions. I think advocating for having the decision process where you feel like you have the knowledge about the decisions you're making, that you've been provided that information in a way that you can understand it and understand the risk and benefits, is extremely important, whether it's a surgical decision or a medical decision. Today, I think we have to ask our healthcare providers, physicians, hospitals, and others to provide us with that kind of information. These are really important decisions for families to make, and they should be made in an informed choice way.
You were telling us earlier when talking about your own spinal problems that you haven't yet gotten an MRI. It was in part because you felt like you didn't even want to know. And also because MRIs are limited in what they can tell you, because they sometimes mislead you and show you something being wrong that isn't actually the cause of the symptoms. Do you get anxious about recurrences? You know, are you the kind of person who worries about back pain when you get it and worries about getting it again after it's gone away?
I don't worry about it, because I actually accept that it's going to happen again, and I think that the listener shouldn't be afraid either. I think that recurrences are very common. 30% of people have recurrences within the year of their first episode. So, and again, the fear of recurrence and that something's gone wrong or you've done something wrong isn't the case. You can't prevent it. I think what you can do is try to stay in good condition so that when you get a recurrence that your body's better able to tolerate it and that you can recover faster. If you don't stay in good condition and exercise, I think when you get a recurrence, it's harder to recover. But I think, Terry, that's true with any condition. I think the more that we're in good physical condition, I think it helps our mind and I think it helps our body to recover faster. Being in good condition and moving forward probably helps me to not be so much afraid, and I think the listeners shouldn't be afraid, but they have to have the expectation that it will occur again. But more often than not, over 90% of the time, it's going to get better just as it did the first time.
Well, Dr. Weinstein, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, gosh, it's been my pleasure, Terry. Thank you so much.
Dr. James Weinstein is chairman of the Department of Orthopedics at Dartmouth Medical School.